Hey, anyone watching this? I'm Roosh V, and this is a message from Butterproof Entertainment. Us here at Butterproof Gaming want to let you know about our next big event. On October 1st, we'll be hosting our very first video game tournament. This will be an online Mortal Kombat 11 tournament. We will have Mortal Kombat Extraordinaire, Armani Vince is our MC. Our grand prize is going to be $250 cash. $250 cash. We'll be giving out cash prizes to our top 8 contestants. And we'll be raffling off some cash in between matches, so there's plenty of reasons to tune in. There is a $10 entry fee, and you must be able to stream the Twitch upon entry. And since this is an online tournament, a strong internet connection is required, because if you have repeated connection issues, you will be disqualified. To enter, all you gotta do...
Hey, how y'all doing? This is that's the first inaugural episode of Then and Now. And how y'all doing, brothers?
Yeah, not too bad.
Doing good, man.
We trying to do things sometimes, you know. You know, trying to expand our horizons a little bit. Yeah. How you doing, by the way?
Well, you Rain. Always good to see you, Rain. Always good. And I heard from the grapevine that Rain is an incredible Mortal Kombat player. I heard she talks all kinds of trash. So if she can put her money where her mouth, I mean, this is what I heard. So on the streets, in LA. I mean, so if she wants to step up, more power to her. More power to her.
I want to see all the smoke. I need to see that.
Yeah.
I guess. Oh, do you want to cover like the little change in the tournament entry process?
Yeah. It's a slight change. In the commercial initially, we had everyone register at smash.gg, but it's going to be through Facebook now. So it's not a huge difference. It's still right there in our Blurterproof Entertainment link tree. But come out and just shoot your shot and get that $250. Get you a bag of, you know, Blurterproof Gaming.
That's right. That's right.
Right. Exactly,
and again, trash talking is not only encouraged; it's required.
Yeah, it's a necessity. If you got to pay $10 and you got to talk shit, like that's the rules.
Yeah, when you enter the actual like application, you have to say something about someone's mom. That's part of it. It's a section for it.
Yes, sir. So I guess, guys, for the first talking point, we're going to get into the What If series, right? That's the first thing on the docket.
Right on.
Yeah. So get into it. I guess we'll start with the newest episode and work our way backwards with the Monger and Tony Stark episode. This is the episode I've been looking forward to since the trailer dropped. I didn't know what to expect. I was just surprised at that little combination. I was kind of really surprised, but I really also enjoyed it. Just a keynote, want to try to avoid spoilers to start off with. So for a general synopsis, I will say that Killmonger really like this. Took what he did in the Black Panther and like expounded upon it times five. If that makes any sense.
Yes, I completely.
Yeah,
agree.
Tay, you are 100. I might actually hit you up to help us MC that. We gonna talk, Tay.
Yeah. Yes. The answer is yes, Tay. You can definitely talk trash, and you're more welcome to join. Real quick to address the question that brother Dev asked, or not the question, but what he posed. I agree. I think that it was a way to kind of fully. I loved Michael B. Jordan, aka Killmonger, in Black Panther. He's my favorite part of that movie.
Mm-hmm.
But
he's
a good part of that movie. But he doesn't really show up until like the end of the first act, basically, and we don't really get to see his full. We don't get to see him fully realized. All of his prowess, essentially. And this show, this 30-minute episode of What If, basically showed how much of a beast and mastermind he really, truly, actually is. So I actually like his representation in this more than in the movies. You can add me all you want. I see Rain typing madly right now, but it is what it is.
I think I agree with you on that point. Like, I feel like he was a little bit more methodical in this one, and he used a lot more intelligence in like his manipulation.
Yeah. Yes. Exactly. And that was the fun of it, though. It was the fun from the start. He was three steps ahead, and Pepper was the only one that kind of was like, this guy, I know, I can't exactly pinpoint what's wrong with him. He seems, on paper, he's perfect, but there's something. He's almost too together. Almost too smart.
Right. Yeah, she what was her exact word? She said, everybody wants something, but I can't, he wants nothing. That's why it's weird. So
Like that. I can't remember the exact exactly, everybody wants something from Tony when they meet him, but she didn't like she can't get everything because he doesn't want. I was like, damn, is he a good guy in this one? I'm like, oh, this is kind of, I mean, this is cool. I get this what if, but I liked how if IT was like, so he went a different way about getting what he wanted this time.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
I really it really hit me that this was like around 2008 until we got to the point to where they interacted with Wakanda again. I don't really think that's too big of a spoiler. And you see Shuri is like, like 12? 12, 11 or something like that.
Wait, so how old is she supposed to be in Black Panther?
I assume she was in like early 20s. I assume like I assume she was in her early 20s. I don't know.
At least.
Yeah, they never really say her age at all, actually.
No. Okay. So I know Letitia Wright's what 21 or she's young. I think she's early 20s in real life. And I believe she's supposed to be I feel like she's at least gone through college and gotten that knowledge. So I would say she's at least late teens, early 20s. So it with means in this what if episode, she's probably at least 18, right?
No, because I'm in this episode is 2000. If she's that young in 2008, I was 8 in 2008, and I'm 21 now. So if she's been through college at least.
And plus, like she's 11, crazy advanced. So like she went through college at like 9.
Yeah, you're so, right. I went way off. I need to stop doing cocaine in the mornings for breakfast. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, because this is you're right.
It's 2008. California breakfast.
The LA. The LA. California breakfast.
California breakfast. Exactly. Yeah, you're right. It was 2008 was when Iron Man was, and the Black Panther was way out. Okay, you're right.
Yeah, because Black Panther happened, was that 2018? So that was like literally 10 years.
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. My bad. I'm sorry, y'all. I'm going to stop snorting blow.
Yeah.
So but, I can still snort blow? Okay, cool. It's dance.
Feel good. Whatever makes you feel good, man. Half Hollywood's doing this, so why not?
Half?
When in L.A., do as L.A. do.
Yes, yeah, right on. Right on. But no, I mean, we're not getting the spoilers or anything, but yeah, it was really cool to see Shuri back and see Shuri doing her thing.
This is really a testament to Tony Stark's journey, seeing think about where he ends up, you know, by the time he gets Endgame versus like the Tony that you get in this episode. Like he's not the same person. And it makes sense why he's not.
It made perfect sense. And I think what it really did show is that this is something we talked about before about, I'm not gonna get into too personal over here, but all of us, Otis and I, have talked about how our lives were set on different trajectories after something happened to us, kind of humbled us in certain ways. Mm-hmm. And essentially what we're seeing here is where Tony has a different experience. We all know the movie, the 2008 movie, how Iron Man was severely humbled, and when he spent his time with Jensen in the cave, that made him a better man, a different man altogether. This is, imagine Killmonger is that person. So that's the influence you have. What would that do to you, etc.?
Did Tony feel a little naive to y'all about this episode? Like a little too trust, like for somebody that intelligent and that's hard. I was like, you trust this man a little too much, too fast. I'm not gonna say what he did. Go ahead.
From the circumstances, I can't necessarily blame him because, like, you know, he comes out and he saves him right away, and then he puts out that his COO was the one that put the hit out on him in the first place. So, like,
yeah.
I feel in a way, Killmonger, like, he manipulates this to earn his trust. It makes sense. I didn't think that was too much of a reach.
Yeah, and they do hang on what they call in writing, hang a lantern on it. They have Pepper mention a few things as far as like you were conveniently, or was it Pepper or someone that mentioned you were conveniently in this place, mm-hmm. and he actually gives an explanation as to why he was there. So they are trying to address. These things.
I thought that was weird when I saw it for the first time. I was like, man, you just happen to be where he is and like save him in the exact moment and then expose, like you happen to have all the information by a CFO or CFO or CEO, whatever. You CEO, I'm like, then for me, I'm like, if somebody really close to me that was like a family friend tried to kill me, I'd be even more worried about trusting people, especially the guy that just popped up out of nowhere. That's just me though. I assume the super genius that sarcastic as hell would have like thought that through a little bit more, but that's what it is.
Yeah, I see what you're saying, but here's a situation that the three of us, at least I hope not, can't quite relate to, is being literally at death's door and having someone save us. That kind of imprinting on somebody can do things.
No, it's happened before.
I've never been, you know, literally getting ready to die under crossfire, and then have someone come in and pick up a missile and throw it away to save my life.
Especially now, a missile with your name on it. That's one of
the thing too. It's like, it's a weird sense there. So I would probably be that much more willing to go along with what that person had to say. And then, like you said too, after the whole reveal of the CEO type stuff, he's got I would give him a lot more slack. I wouldn't be nearly as suspicious of that person, most likely.
Fair enough.
If you have been under fire, Charlie, and I was wrong.
No, not under fire. Well, one time, not really. I almost drowned before my cousin saved me. So it was like, I don't like trust my cousin 100%. He saved my life, but I'm still just like, I appreciate you, bro. This boy is solid, but still, I'm like, you lying?
After your cousin saved your life, you gave him some dap and then walked away. You'd say, "Oh my God, thank you, Brian." You just like, whatever. You're nobody to me.
Yeah, but I mean, but it is a slightly different situation because that warder wasn't actively trying to kill you, as opposed to you know, the soldier.
I felt like it was. It hurt like it
did. You developed a certain circumstance.
The hands afterwards, yeah.
I was on a water prison jutsu. It hurt, but yeah, damn, my bad. Oh, I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead. Oh, my bad.
Yeah. No, that was pretty much it. I was gonna say, like, if you had to rank this episode amongst like the rest of them that have come out, where do you put this one?
Damn, this is like number two. For me,
it's definitely the top three.
Oh, never mind. That's me three. Yeah, because I thought about the Doctor Strange episode. I forgot about that. That's my number two.
Yeah, it's top three for me. It'd probably be number two for me. Probably number two for me. Definitely top three. Yeah.
So what's your number one, E? I'll start with you.
So you're not gonna like my number one though. But my number one was that episode that was basically a David Fincher film, where I guess we can say it now, where Ant-Man was going around killing everybody, because I love murder mysteries. I love them. And number two is Killmonger. Number three is Zombie Land. Yeah.
What's your try? What's your?
See, I'm mad now.
I went above this one, and then where you rank this one?
So I had to drop it down to four because I forgot all about the Ant-Man. I'm gonna say Hank Pym. Yeah, the Hank Pym episode where you're telling everybody.
Yeah,
I forgot about that episode. That episode gonna be in my three spot, and then I gotta move this the Killmonger episode down to four, because then I have Doctor Strange at two, and then the Zombieland or Marvel Zombies at number one for me.
Yeah, that's one of the best ones. Yeah, it really is. Yeah.
So for me. I got Cha-Cha number one, you know, seeing Child in Space, that's takes the cake for me. And then Zombies number two.
And then we'll get into this later on, but that is surprising because we know how much you love zombies. Mm-hmm. Like, this is, mm-hmm. I mean, spoiler alert, Otis and I literally wouldn't be afraid. I would be on this show without zombies. We'll get into more about that later on, but so I'm interested. Okay, interesting to me.
I mean, since we've talked about it, might as well, you know,
talk about
how y'all feel about that Marvel Zombies episode, man.
What's the dude comics playing? Man, tell you something. Let me tell you something, man. This episode, I'm gonna try to email him. I really loved because I read the Marvel Zombies run and it stayed. It stayed 100% true. That were really dope, like little plot points that they had in there that were subtle. Like I can tell that they're like this next phase of Marvel, they're really like pandering towards comic book fans because they're taking a lot more details into it and like they're a lot more similar to the comic runs. I thought it was dope that we got to see heroes that did normally interact in the movies interact and like how they're like. I never in my life would have thought Okoye would be interacting with Peter Parker in a long time. Like I was like, I didn't think that was gonna come for a long time. So I thought that was really dope in that little interaction. And then getting to see a different side of Vision in that whole, again, I'll try to avoid the spoilers best I can with that whole thing. It was like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, it's like, Rain, have you seen this episode of the what if episode with the zombies?
It was dope. Like you got to see different sides of characters that you don't know, and then different interactions you don't normally get to see. Shit, Happy Hogan. I'm like, I didn't think I was gonna see Happy do anything relevant for ever. Ironheart, maybe.
I'll let you go first.
Let me go first. Okay, I'll keep it brief because I want to hear what you actually want to hear Jared to say, because I know you're a fan of zombies. I thought it was the best part about it was how it was the escalation, how it started at point A, and you think the story's gonna be one way, and it changes, it shifts like a proper zombie story should. You can't predict how it's gonna go, and it had the right level of tragedy, and it kept going. And I was afraid they were gonna kind of cop out in some way because of the Disney, overall Disney produced show, and they didn't. They doubled down, and they had fun with it too. They made good use of the fact that this is a superhero universe, so the superpowers, and they actually applied that to how these things played out. Imagine a zombie with superpowers. Well, they did it, and it's pretty awesome. So I really enjoyed it. But Otis, go ahead, my brother. The floor is yours.
Yeah, I thought it was a perfect mix of campy horror and suspense. Because I mean, you got the little short thing that Spider-Man does at the beginning, being his normal 15 self, and then you got the horror, because no one you come in and Avengers are already zombies. I'm sorry, that's a spoiler I'm throwing up, but yeah. Avengers are already zombies, and then you get the twist. There's a twist there, and it's a good one.
It's a great one. And but the best part about it too, and so does Dev. I mean, y'all know zombie movies and horror movies. There are a lot of tropes that they hit, and the twist is a trope from other zombie stories, but it works because you just don't see it coming, and it's also within the context of the Marvel universe or superhero universe. So I really, really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah. There's one trope in this episode. No, my bad. There's one trope in this episode that's in most zombie movies that sometimes is handled correctly that I'm gonna just have to spoil this part with Wasp? Yeah, with Wasp growing big. My thing, like when you get bitten, you're never gonna turn into a zombie. Everybody knows it. My thing was, she's gonna turn into a zombie. And she can shrink microscopically and grow that big. Why would you not kill her as she was turning? Like, you've already had episodes where an Ant-Man or Yellow Jacket murder people. Why would you not? Like, you've been that dark already. Why would you hey, I know you can grow really small and really big and then infect this and kill us. Didn't Scott Lang infect somebody like that in this episode? Like, turn it small or whatever? I thought.
Scott, he was in the episode, but at the end,
he could have sworn somebody turned small and bit somebody. But I feel like she'd be the when you have that ability, I'm like, kill her. She knows
what's happening. In that particular situation, they didn't really have a choice because she was the only reason why they got over to the place where they were going.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
if they would try to kill her beforehand, they would have got there. Immediately after they got there, she passed out, and
they would have had to literally, because she fell backwards. They would have had to go out there into the ensemble of zombies to put her down. Also, this is one thing that has to be addressed when it comes to zombie movies. Those are people. They may be super infected and diseased and not there, but if we recognize that person, think about it, Dill. I was thinking Zell and then Div. But think about it, Div. If all of a sudden I turn into a zombie, could you just put a bullet in my head that easily? You know me, and so it's. I know you would still would. You would do it. I know you would do it. I know you would, but it wouldn't be as simple as he's already gone. Bam! It would take you at least a moment. To process, my boy is gone. My boy is, or maybe not. Maybe you are a hardcore sociopath. Maybe you're cold blooded as hell. And it would take but even before I left, you're like, done. Maybe. But for me personally, I couldn't do that. I couldn't, if one of y'all turned or were turning, I wouldn't be able to just put you down that quickly. It's not, I have an attachment.
What actually came out first? Did Marvel Zombies drop first or Blackest Night? Because they are pretty two similar stories.
I believe Blackest Night came out first.
I believe.
I believe so because I think Marvel
Zombies.
Yeah, the comic.
Yeah, comic.
The Jeff Johns run. Which
it may have been around the same time.
It was because if you go back to 2008.
Yeah, if you go back to 2008. So Sinestro Corps, Sinestro Corps does predate the MCU.
Yeah,
Blackest.
No, that run is my favorite Green Lantern run of all time.
Right, right, and that was the next. Yeah. That was the biggest Green Lantern run before the Blackest Night. I believe they're kind of coincide. I believe Blackest Night and the MCU kind of came out around the same time in a way.
So. But yeah, to answer your question, Ethan. It would be different if you were like, this is our first interaction with zombies. I didn't know what the hell's going on. And I was like, damn, you kind of sick. You just kind of trying to nibble on me or whatever. Let me just like try to push them off me a little bit. But if you and Otis have already like encountered a couple zombies at this point and we know what's up. As soon as I see you starting to turn or I know what's up, I'm sorry, dog. I love you, but I got, because in my mind, you're gone. You're not here. This is just an infection at this point. Like once you turn, you are no longer you to me. You are a husk.
Damn, that is cold. Here's the thing, man.
But like, I would do it as a mercy. It was like, I know Eve wouldn't want to be responsible for potentially hurting all of our other people around us. So,
I'd be sad. I'll
be hurt about it after, but at the moment, I'm sorry. It's
cap, my boy. I'm sorry. So, especially if you're rotting and like your jaw falling off, whatever, you don't look like you anymore. So I don't associate a zombie with you.
You could look exactly like you, E. But if I know you're a zombie, I'm putting that shot in. I'm sorry.
Here's the thing. First of all, both y'all off my Christmas card list this year permanently. Second of all, I'm burning my PSN account with y'all. Done forever. But the main thing is that. Once, like for example, in this story, she realizes her suit's been cut and she's going to turn. She's still human. Mm-hmm. She's still there, and they don't put her down. What I'm getting at is that at that time, if I knew y'all had been infected, but y'all still hadn't turned into a zombie, but you were sick, I wouldn't just kill you like that.
Oh no, I wouldn't kill you instantly.
I would not do that. Charlie, but it made it sound like it was like he would. The second my arm hurts. You put me down. It's like, no, it's barbed wire. I scratched on barbed wire. Nothing to do with a zombie.
Would you look at me like a chicken tender? That's when it's a wrap. You sorry. Don't. I'm there. Yeah, at that point.
Once, there's a pattern when it comes to zombies. Like, you know, you first you're sick, then you pass out, and then you're zombified. When you pass out, like, two to the
wrap. Yeah, yes, I'm sorry.
That's
double again, tap.
That's fair. Now, here's the thing. Here's the thing, though.
See, that's Rain with us.
Of course, Rain is savage as hell. We know that. She's a Mortal Kombat 11 champion from 7 years ago. But what I would like to say real quick is that there are mercy killings where you guys wouldn't have to put me down. I left on this scenario, I'm the zombie. But which you can, like, and most of the times, once that person knows they're turning, the party is moving on. And that person will, like, stay behind. And they'll have a gun so they can put themselves down or whatnot. That's what that's what I would do to a friend. I don't know that I'd have the strength to kill someone either right before they turn to a zombie or once they become a zombie, but I would leave them the means to do it to themselves. Now, if it comes down to I'm still around them, I can't get avoided, they're going to turn, and they ask me to do it, I would try to help them at a euthanasia kind of thing. I would help them, I guess. Yeah.
Hey. Man, this is a zombie universe. Bullets is some, guns is some. We got a gun. I'm sorry. Just rock with me until you pass out, and then we'll have to take care of it. Because I can't leave one of my own. I'm survive. When it comes to this, like zombie stuff, I'm going to survive. So I'm going to need all the advantages I need. So there's no me holding you down and tying you up because of a scratch and I'm done. Or me leaving all the bullets with you to kill yourself. If we got extra guns, I'm like, by all means. Yeah, here's the gun. Take care of yourself whenever you feel like you're about to go. But if this is like the one of three we have, and we don't have a lot of, I gotta put you down, my man. Every you pass, I'll sit with you till you die, but I can't leave the gun with you.
No. I mean, odds are if we were traveling together in a zombie apocalypse, we both have guns. And you damn well believe I'm going to keep my gun with me, especially from with you. You're the guy who got saved from a pool by your cousin, and you bitch slapped him. So you're clearly not the most giving person here. So I understand that from the jump. Matter of fact, even in a healthy situation, I would probably keep my distance from you because I don't want to get blasted just from walking around looking weird. So I understand that. I understand that entirely. I do. Fair enough.
Yeah, I got a funny question. Yeah, I've heard this question before.
I'm thinking, because like, if I leave you with that gun, like, what if the zombies like figure out how to use the gun? Or, you know, what if my gun jams? Then I won't have a gun. I might need yours, you know?
Like, exactly.
Fair. I see what you're saying. You're doing the old Raptors in Jurassic Park. Like, they learn how to use doors theory. And that's in this Marvel, the MCU, in the I forgot what number of the universe is, the zombie universe, but the zombies are more sentient. They can do things. You see in the episode how they're able
to get powers.
So I would not leave a gun with that one. But in most zombie movies and stuff, they are very much basic ass, super duper non-sentient id. That they're just going after brains. They can't even open doors or walk or talk or anything else. So it depends.
Zombie line was a problem. Like,
yes.
Still being able to make the teleport circles, but a zombie, that's a major problem. And I'm making a teleporting zombie and something one day. That's gonna happen.
Yes. Hey,
dude, this is how smart those zombies are. In the comics, those zombies literally figured out a way to defeat Galactus and eat Galactus. Like, he popped in and he was like, man, y'all out here dead. Yeah. They were like, we gonna eat
take
him.
Spider-Man had to like get a crazy power up in that.
They ate Galactus and got cosmic powers and went around eating planets.
He became cosmic afterwards. So I'm trying to think, I can't remember how Spider-Man did it though. But they became cosmic afterwards.
Became cosmic afterwards? I think I remember right.
Spider-Man.
Yeah, well, it was cosmic Spider-Man, but they weren't cosmic before
they ate Galactus.
What I'm saying is they weren't. Because Cosmic Spider-Man is obviously OP, basically. They weren't OP when they beat Galactus. They were basic-ass zombies when they beat Galactus.
No, Reed Richards had developed some kind of weapon. Reed Richards developed some kind of weapon that took it like that. They ate the Silver Surfer. That's what it was. They ate him, and then Galactus came to Earth. And then they had to, like,
more weapons. Right!
Yeah.
Now, here's the thing. I don't know how they beat the Silver Surfer, because he's actually... He's not as OP as Galactus, but he's
pretty broken.
He's designed to be broken. He's an intergalactic being.
I'm trying to remember. I think they just caught him lacking.
Yeah.
Like, would he even work? Like, is he even, like, technically alive? Because I know he's the herald of Galactus, but, like...
I think he's considered alive.
He was transformed into the Surfer while he was alive, so I assume he's still alive.
Yeah. But it is. What is bizarre, though, is the idea that his abilities are essentially contagious. Like, once you, if you were a zombie and eat him, you get his ability. Like, I mean, in most zombie movies, if a person has diabetes, you eat that person, you don't get diabetes. That zombie doesn't get diabetes. So it is interesting that they got the power cosmic from him after they ate him. But that's right. I forgot about that. That's crazy.
That run was wild.
Yeah, it was fun. It was a fun one. Yeah, it was fun.
Exactly. I guess we can transition into. Well, I got a quick question. This is a fun question for you guys. Yeah. Who out of the three of us do you think? Let's say one of us got bit by a zombie, had like a zombie bite. Which one do you think would be the ones to hide that bite? Your person just hit the hides it until they just turn.
No, I wouldn't. If I knew it was actually a bite, like again, if it wasn't a barbed wire scratch, if it was actually a bite, I definitely wouldn't hide it. No, I wouldn't do that to y'all. Now, there are scenarios, too, where if you're able to catch it in time, you've seen it before, if it's on the wrist or somewhere on the lower arm, cut that arm off. Let me ask y'all this. Would y'all do that? Would y'all be willing to cut off a limb to stay in the
I couldn't cut off my own limb, but hell yeah. Like, that's one time where I'm like, cut this shit off. Cut this shit off. Like, I don't want to be a zombie.
But here's the thing, what you are saying, too, is like, you're already in a dystopian world. The world's already gone, basically. It's like, is it worth living that much longer in it?
Because I want to be a zombie. Like, I have no urge to die in any scenario whatsoever, period. Like, if I could somehow find the way to be immortal, I would. But, like...
I'm learning, I've known you for a year and a half. I'm learning so much about y'all. I know that never go anywhere with Charlie because I'd be left for dead immediately. And I know that the Otis now is a megalomaniac that wants to rule the world like Galactus.
I don't want to rule the world. I just don't want to die. You know?
Fair. I love it.
But yeah, like transition. Cut that shit off immediately. Period. Okay. Arm, leg, whatever it is.
Oh, this is like just a stump. Like, I'm a stump, but I'm alive forever. I've been here for 25 years.
Mm-hmm. Man, I may just have to kill me and just lead it over with, from being honest. With zombie universe, I mean, we don't got no cure in sight. I'm like, bruh.
That's what I'm saying. I ain't gonna make it.
Just let me go. I run some more. I'm fast, but I got the endurance like that to run for miles. And miles. I don't got any. Maybe if it's walking kids, maybe, but if we talking World War Z, anyway, that's a perfect transition. Movies. Marvel zombie movies. Obviously, the worst one to be in, World War Z, because they're sprinting like Usain Bolt after you and jumping and shit.
Sprinting. They took down a helicopter in the air. It was in the air. They climbed over a wall. Like, this is a walled city. It was like, oh, it's no problem.
But you got to remember what it was. They were triggered by sound. They only get amped up like that when they have sound. Otherwise, they are much more docile. And also, if you have some kind of an ailment or a disease or whatnot, they will actually avoid you. They won't bite you. So if you, if I was there, I'd be good. They wouldn't come anywhere near me. But that's where I would go first. I'm sorry. I'm go this weekend. Yeah.
Like, ain't nothing docile about someone's issue. Have you ever tried to be quiet at night? Like, ever, like, have you, in a situation where you're supposed to be quiet, have you ever, like, tried to be quiet? You know how hard it is to stay quiet?
Of course.
And hey, God have mercy on you if you're a snorer. You snore in your sleep, it's a wrap. Ooh, it's a wrap. You don't even know. Yeah. You just wake up, you get nibbled on.
But in all fairness, snorers deserve to die. But the thing is, this is, for the most part, if we got to a full-blown dystopian universe, there wouldn't be as much electronic stuff going off. There'd be some, I guess, but like in the movie, the biggest thing that happens is they have a big-ass PA system blaring like loud noises. That's what drives them crazy. That's what drives them off the wall and everything. So I remember that part. Ordinarily, that stuff doesn't happen. Even if you're just watching the play, like us, the three of us, we're on PSN. Mm-hmm. We have our headphones on playing it. No one hears that kind of stuff. So,
man, I get tired just looking at them dudes running. I'm like, they are in an athletic sprint. They got better running form than the Flash from the Justice.
They look like the Flash. They actually do.
They look better than him.
Open hands. Keep open. We've all seen 28 weeks later or 28 days later.
I've seen both. Love both. I have. Well, love the first more than the second.
Okay. So those have the rage virus. If you all remember the opening in 28 weeks later, where we see our boy Robert Carlyle like, trying to run to a boat, they are sprinting. There's no music. There's no sound. I mean, the music, of course, of the movie soundtrack, but they're just they can smell him from I don't know how many yards away, and they are sprinting after him like running backs on steroids. That's where I could never go to 28 weeks later or 28 days later. That world is just they're called rage zombies in that one. Mm-hmm. Those are the ones that they don't need any kind of thing to attract you. It doesn't matter if you have a disability or whatnot, they're coming for you. They don't care. That's cold blooded. They're the Charlie Wilsons of zombies. So I would stay clear of them.
I ain't running after not a damn day. You're going to cap me.
And that's other thing is, like, you don't even have to get bit to get the virus in 28 days later. I don't know if you remember that one scene where a drop of blood dropped into his
drop
eye.
Of a drop.
Instantly. He turned like done. That.
Done. Well, I mean, it's bodily fluid exchange, of course.
Brendan Gleeson's a big dude.
Mm-hmm. But still, just like, he looked up at the wrong time, and he was a zombie.
He was a zombie.
Going low key.
They went shopping. They went, you know, raiding a bunch of grocery stores, driving off into the country. It's like, yeah, we're gonna make it. Oops.
A random drop of blood. That's all it took.
Yeah. Wouldn't it happen just hitting your skin in general? Since your skin is a membrane, so like it gets like stuff gets in your skin into your bloodstream at some point. I feel like that's any blood on your body should like. I feel like in most zombies, they kind of like look over that. I'm like, should you turn just from any kind of like bodily fluid from a zombie hitting you?
Yeah, that I've thought about that before too, because the skin is a membrane that does absorb stuff. So I don't know why it doesn't that doesn't tend to happen.
Pothole, whatever it is.
Syphilis. I don't know if that's a deadly enough virus for you to stop to stop you from getting hunted by zombies. I think they'd be like, it's a little off, but you know, it's like eating a person that's on an expiration date. It's like, it's okay. It's okay.
If you milk card, you like, you know, it's not too bad. I can deal with this.
yeah. I wouldn't put it this way, Rain. I wouldn't deliberately contract syphilis, thinking that would keep you safe in the apocalyptic dystopian.
Yeah, what if they didn't give him like polio or something in the movie? Like
they did. Yeah.
Yeah. It was not like a lightweight virus that they got to keep them away. They was dying. They were dying.
It was. Because as handsome as Brad Pitt was, he put that stuff in him. So he's like, I gotta get there now, or I'm Dunsville. So he injected himself to walk by them. Yeah, he knew he was on a very short time. Yeah, but,
I mean, he is right now.
He literally is. That's he's like,
hey, you better put some respect to my name, Miss Buttersworth. I may have opened a bottle on one. Never mind. I'll shut up. Anyway, going into the next games, guys. Obviously, zombie game. It's like playing together. Yeah, like Left 4 Dead series, Dead Rising, the Resident Evil stuff. If you want to count Silent Hill, I don't. Do you really count Silent Hill like that? I mean, there's not like a zombie
element in it. That's a horror game.
They're not undead. Maybe they're undead. They're not.
They kind of move like they're maybe they're demons.
Yeah, but they're not trying to like bite you. It's a different rule.
Like the thing about Silent Hill is like they're essentially stuck in a purgatory. So like they're neither living or dead. They're just
chilling. It's more demonic kind of stuff than it is.
But if we're talking about games, talking Resident Evil.
Yeah.
Dead, got soon to be Back for Blood, Dying Light
series.
Back in Blood.
Sounds like a DMX album in the 90s. Yeah.
There's gotta be a rap album called Back for Blood.
I'd be disappointed. I'm almost 100% sure. Yeah, if there's any of it out there, we gotta make one ourselves.
And watch, it's somebody's second album, but they still got the number 4 in there.
Right. Wait, so I'll let you go first. As far as I think your favorite series we said was Left 4 Dead back in the day.
No,
that's tough.
Back in the day,
when I was a kid, Left 4 Dead was like the first game that me and my dad played through together, like completely, like 100% start to finish. So that Left 4 Dead has a special place in my heart for games, but I think the one that I've probably enjoyed the most, surprisingly, is Call of Duty Black Ops 2 Zombies, because, man, that was an addiction. It was an addiction. Messing with George. There was a map in that game where it's called Call of the Dead, where George A. Romero is literally like walking around.
That's dope.
With a light, like the setting light, just swinging at you while zombies are coming.
That's cool. I didn't know that.
It's pretty dope. And there's Sarah Michelle Gellar. That's one of the players you play as. There's
like Buffy, basically. Like a Buffy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Danny Trejo's in there.
Of course.
I forgot who the other two were, but those are the two that everybody always wanted to get selected as, because your character is picked randomly when you go into zombies. But still, like, I gotta say Black Ops 2.
Right on. You wanna go next, Tiff, or want me to go?
Yeah, I'll go. It's mine's pretty quick. I didn't play a lot of zombie games growing up besides Call of Duty, because obviously I told you guys I didn't really get into Resident Evil like that. But yeah, Call of Duty, I think it was Black Ops 1. Stepdad, like, we'd all go in there and play that 24/7, like all day, every day, because you play for hours. Yeah. Yeah, we just play it all the time on weekends or whatever, because, again, my mom was real big on getting this multiplayer game, so me and my brother would share, because we had the one system for a long time before she got it up on it to get Xbox or whatever. So we just played zombies and, like, Well, there's other games, but we'll get to those later for other segments. But zombies was a big thing for us that we played all the time.
Right on, right on. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I played the original Call of Duty games, but I never played the zombie add-on or DLC. I did play the zombie add-on for Red Dead Redemption, and that was fun. It was a fun mashup there because it's cowboys versus zombies. So I really enjoyed that kind of idea.
I'll Red Dead too, because I will buy that as soon as possible.
It was so successful with the first one. I can't imagine they wouldn't. It took forever to get it out there, but I can't imagine they wouldn't repeat it. I know zombies aren't as popular now as they were. In their heyday, zombies were everywhere. So
I feel like it's coming back.
It may come back. Yeah, it may come back. So, but that was fun.
It'll circle back.
Yes, the trends typically are that way. But my single favorite series, y'all already know this, is definitely Resident Evil video games. Mila Jovovich, not the movies. Good God, those movies are terrible. But the video games, my top three games of all time is Resident Evil 4. And if both of you already know this, the main character in my flagship comic book, his outfit is largely inspired by Leon Scott Kennedy from Resident Evil 2. So I love the Resident Evil games. There are definitely some highs and lows in that franchise. I'm not going to lie to you, but overall, growing up, because y'all, everyone knows, I'm a bit older than y'all. The first horror survival game that I ever played, the one that really put horror survival on the map, was Resident Evil 1. And actually being scared by a video game was like, whoa, this is what's going on here. So I will always have a major, major, major sweet spot for that franchise.
To me, it's a classic.
Well, you know, go ahead, finish your thought.
Yeah, no, that was it. I just wanted to say it was a classic.
Oh, my bad. I'm glad Ethan talked about his story, actually, because I'll transition right into the next topic of your story itself, Slayton Ash. I have the physical copy here myself. Let me get the camera right. This is dope. This is a novelization. This is not the single issues, but again, just I love it. I wasn't able to finish the entire thing because I was college procrastination.
You're a college student.
I procrastinated, so I was able to get through like almost half of it, and the story I found was really, really interesting. I did want to get into. I was going to ask you inspiration for Slate is no Ash the Cop, right? Ash the Cop.
Ash the Cop. Right. Yeah.
Ash the Cop. I was going to ask you what his inspiration was, but I guess you kind of answered earlier with Leon.
Well, so, outfit, yes.
I
don't really
know. Answer this question. I think I know.
Go ahead.
I remember it is a mixture of Axel Foley, adult Huey Freeman. And Leon S. Kennedy, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Crash. Exactly. Yeah. Okay.
Exactly. I pay
attention.
Damn.
I wasn't testing you, but you definitely passed the test. It was meant to be. What I realized as I was writing him more is Ash was kind of who I wanted to be. So I was gleaning from those three inspirations, but then also trying to make Ash a kind of person I wish I could have been. If I was in a zombie apocalypse, I want to be like Ash. So there it is.
Right there. Yeah.
So
I was like I read like Divine Influence and other stories, and others were kind of dark. I didn't realize how dark this shit was until we get into the point about like why the girls are so valuable about them breeding. I'm like, oh, they rape a lot in the story. Jesus.
Spoiler alert. You do not see it. I'm never going to make up some story where you get to see rape. That doesn't happen. But
okay, I didn't finish it yet.
those are the stakes. Like, those are the. Yeah, so most zombie, we all know, talking about tropes and stuff in zombie books, zombie movies, zombie games. In this particular world of Slayton Ash, the stakes are not the world's going to end. The world's already gone into dystopia. Essentially, what's happening here is they're trying to keep a person from being violated by zombies because the zombies don't want to kill her. They need her for to be their queen, essentially, against her will. So those are the stakes. They're trying to keep a young girl from becoming a zombie baby mama, basically.
Yeah, these zombies really kind of reminded me of like a combination of zombies from like Doom, movie, and like, iZombies in a sense, but talk.
I love iZombie. Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I love iZombie.
Yeah, not bad. I said iZombie, and I meant to say I Am Legend zombie also.
Well, no,
I meant to say I Am Legend too.
Yes, but actually both are right. Yeah, I Am Legend and I Am iZombie. Yeah, that's great. Both great.
I had to finish that show. Good show, by the way. Yeah, I like that show.
Yeah. I got a question for you.
Yeah, it was dope.
I'm sorry.
when you were go ahead. Putting this story together, like, where did you draw from? Like, how did you end up with this particular scenario that you did you grow in the
right time? Right. Yeah. So with this particular scenario, basically what it was, oh, I think we may have briefly touched on this, was I like to do a lot of reverse engineering when I write stories. So what I thought of was, I saw a trailer for, if y'all remember back in the day, there's a trailer for a video game called Dead Island. And the way they presented was, and you remember this? Okay. Mm-hmm. But they presented this, they present the trailer, this amazing trailer, but it shows a family together. And you think essentially it's a story of how this family is more or less going to survive the zombies, but you realize very quickly, no, it's you're seeing exactly how they became zombies, which is that's a tragedy. And the real tragedy is that the trailer ends with the father doing what he can to hold on to his daughter during that apocalypse. So my inspiration came from that, as far as I wanted to have a cop. I wanted to almost end with a cop doing succeeding in that. His only job is to try to keep this a child, a young girl, safe from a horde of zombies. And I reverse engineered as to why he was trying to do that. Why would she matter? Why would they care about it? Why would they care so much about her? And when they just kill her, that's been done before. So how could I make this story around that differently? So the original conceit came from watching that trailer. The trailer was amazing. I love that trailer. I watched that trailer for Dead Island, and I wanted to have a scenario in which someone had to do everything they could to protect a young girl from zombies, a horde of zombies.
Yeah, I found that very interesting. One thing I also did enjoy with the other his buddy cop duo partner, I guess, Dr. Slate. I think I can't remember if that was his first or last name. I'm bad. I'm brain freezing. But Dr. Slate and his whole not monologue, but his thought process. I'm trying not to spoil it. I'm trying not to give it away. Him as an individual, because I think, well, you know what? I think they say it in the back. Really, yeah. So like him and the death of his daughter really hit home with me, and about how he kind of interacted with himself in a way where he kind of saw himself as like a monster. It's I love stories where you have a character that they see themselves as something that they created, if that makes any sense. Like, I'm a monster of my own creation. Like, it goes from like him being a monster, and I am that monster. It's like the kind of like not reverse Dr. Frankenstein, but like Dr. Frankenstein and his monster in one scenario. Right. So you have that internal turmoil going on.
That's a good, I never thought about it, but you're right. It is very much Dr. Frankenstein and the Frankenstein's monster in one being. And yeah, he is hoisted by his own petard, as far as he saw himself as a monster and they made himself that monster. And it's meant to be about, for both of them, it's meant to be a story of redemption. They both make some serious mistakes early on. They're trying to find a way to rectify that. And we're seeing it through different means. We're seeing it from different angles, different points of view. A person who was essentially a bit too cocky for his own britches, and Ash, that ended up making a mistake because of said hubris. And a doctor who was too desperate, who's too desperately trying to fix a problem that was beyond him, and he suffered because of that too. So, and the two of them do help each other to, of course, deal with their problems along the way. But that was where I came from. That.
And to give the people a visual, when you know, had to go find
my boys,
like Mash,
boys, there they are. And it's a weird. I'll address this problem right now. For some reason, I don't know why they. So Slate is in fact the zombie doctor guy, the one that had the cricket bat there, and Ash is the cop. But it always says Slate and Ash, a cop and a zombie. I don't know why, it just sounds better, and I don't know why, but it's always, oftentimes they're drawn with Ash on the left and Slate on the right. But it always
it's always
backwards. It's always like backwards. Yeah.
Hey, so inside joke, man.
Slate, but they're Slate and Ash.
Before we get into our last segments, I kind of want to take a second to do our plug segment. I guess we'll call this the plug segment, and kind of give you guys I kind of did an update video on this before, but obviously me and Ethan are working on our first video essay. We're going to be kind of talking about the history of Halloween, how that's going to how it's going to happen, to get into the history of Halloween and different aspects within that, and nerd culture from games, movies, and costumes like that, and cosplay. And then we also have something coming out with me and one of my best friends in middle school, or we're going to produce our own comic. So we have that coming also as well. I'd appreciate any support you guys want to give, even just checking it out. That would be really great, and really, I'd be really appreciative. I think Ethan and Otis would be really appreciative also. I guess for our last plug of the day,
watch that. Mad at you.
Yeah, Ethan. You said what?
I guess.
I was being sarcastic. It's okay.
He's not surprised that Otis is being sarcastic, but yeah, and of course, talking about comics, when they'll tell off the comics,
mm-hmm.
As Charlie and Jeffrey have their comic book coming up. If you're interested in my comic or any of my books that I've made, Slade and Ash, or anything else, of course, please go to echelongnovels.com. It's echelongnovels.com. It says we're sold out. I have access to more books. If you hit me up on there saying I want a book, I'll gladly get you a book. I got Charlie one. So please go there. Yeah. There it is. Thank you so much, Otis.
Yeah. Right, nope, and I can no, personally test it.
I think you spelled it. I'm not sure if you spelled it right or not, but yeah, that's the place to go.
Gotcha. And I guess for our last segment, E gave us a little clip from a show he has coming, either that's coming up, or you guys already have it out.
Yeah, it dropped yesterday, but this is a channel, YouTube channel. If you're into superheroes or pop culture and you want to get deeper into it as far as understanding what these characters' proclivities are sexually, or just have listened to a good podcast about that kind of stuff, I think this might be the show for you. So here's a quick clip from our show.
I'm sure we are all aware of the phrase post-nut clarity, mm-hmm. which means the opposite end, the pre-nut fog. Because it is bad decisions are made. Bad decisions are made when you're horny.
Oh my God, what? I wish I was a man for once in my life, because I would write a fucking book called Prenut Fog, and it would be like a collection of, I don't know, memoirs. Like,
yeah.
All right. That was
pre-nut fog t-shirts are on the way.
I need that on a shirt.
Yeah, we have a whole merch line that just says pre-nut fog. And the thing is, there'll be no context. Everyone will get it, guys and women. But yep, you know what that is. That makes sense. But yeah, but
I need to be like the guy milk shirts that are just like white letters is pre-nut fog question mark.
Yeah, it has to be white. It has to be white and written very sloppily on a black shirt that says pre-nut. Sorry, Otis. I'm sorry. This is very low brow, Otis.
This is hilarious.
Yeah, but definitely come by. The channel is Superheroes Sexualis. If you just type in Superheroes Sex on YouTube, you'll find us. We're having Charlie's going to come on the show hopefully next week, and then Otis is coming on the show very soon as well. Love to have, we'll have more guests on there too. So yeah.
That's me dope.
Yeah.
I guess getting into our last two brand new segments, actually. We'll start with my homeboy, Otis East, and his new segment of Is It Really That Good?
What's really good?
All right, so is It Really That Good is a segment where I'm going to talk about something that is pretty popular, you know, and it was like, is it really that good, you know what I'm saying? And I guess for this week, I'm going to do Train to Busan, because, you know, everyone has it highly regarded as like one of the best zombie movies out there. It's like, is it really that good?
One second, let's give Otis change the camera. So put you in the at front of center. So this is your segment. Give you the floor.
Yeah.
Give you the floor. Go ahead the big one.
So Train to Busan, you know, it's the Korean zombie film. It's a follow up to Seoul Station. I don't know if most people know that. And it's following this father and his piece of shit daughter. That are taking a trip from somewhere to Seoul Station. For some odd reason, people like really regard this as like some type of like movement in the zombie verse, but like it's really just the standard things. It's just zombies on the train. Like it's cool. Like it's not a bad movie, but like there are virtually no redeemable characters, which already made Lee Hutcher film. The people that survive, well, not even the people, the person, I'm sorry, spoiler alert. There's only one survivor, it's the little girl. And she is the worst little girl on the planet. Like, she deserved to not make it. And so, I'll go into this more in a further episode after I do some research, because it's a little impromptu here. But
Real quick, I know I'm talking off screen, but did you appreciate at least the action in the movie? Did it feel well produced?
No, it felt like a B zombie movie, which, I mean, essentially all zombie movies are B zombie movies, but like, yeah, it felt like, honestly, like Zombieland felt more realistic than this to me. Like, it's just not really all that revolutionary to me. It's just a regular movie.
Okay.
Low key, I feel like Zombieland would probably be the most realistic depiction of a zombie, like, horror movie. Like, people are dying or whatever, but I feel like it'd be filled with people just fucking around and, like, trying to have fun.
Oh, yeah.
It would definitely devolve to that.
Yeah. I'm going to LeBron's house. Like, I'm going to
Staples Center. If was somehow able to survive, life would definitely be like Zombieland. Zombie kill of the week. You see it? Yeah.
I agree. It wouldn't. I feel like The Walking Dead is a bit too morose. It would probably get to, because even with my favorite zombie movie is actually what's the one called? The one that Zack Snyder's movie that he actually made, the Dawn of the Dead. Sorry, Dawn of the Dead. And Dawn of the Dead, what it shows is people, like, of course, at first it's a horrible, overwhelming tragedy, but then you kind of get used to it and you kind of hang on the mall. You just kind of used, and you kind of abuse the zombies and kind of have fun. Zombieland, obviously, it has that element in it too. So I agree. Zombieland is close to what actually happened eventually in a zombie apocalypse.
And Cod Pfeiffer, you fucked everything up. I just want you to guys
got Yeah. Yeah, but he means the real life, not the movie. He means the real life.
No, I actually meant the movie. Definitely talking about Dawn of the Dead movie. It's your fault.
Yeah.
You wanted to let your girl be pregnant with a zombie. Like, why did you want that? Like,
now, in all fairness, though, she was pregnant before. It was like she got knocked up by a zombie. She was pregnant and then got bit. Yeah.
Two shots. You know what to shoot. All
right, that's cold blood. That is cold blooded, man. I mean, that's if your girl got pregnant with you was pregnant, like she was like 7-8 months pregnant with their child.
Mm-hmm.
If your girl got bit, would you be so cavalier with the fire? Okay,
mm-hmm. Hold up.
She gonna turn. I'm sorry. She gonna turn.
Yeah, I don't think you heard me, E. But it's fuck them kids.
it could be my mom. It could be like the my favorite teacher that I grew up like loving. Or like, it doesn't matter. Like, if you are a zombie and you're coming for me, you're done. It's a wrap.
Yeah. No, I feel you. I do feel you. I just think that emotions are real. I know you guys are both sociopaths, and I'm afraid of you. I'm terrified of you.
I'm going to feel the emotion after I'm safe. Like, my safety means more than my mental health to me. I'm sorry. My physical safety means more than my mental health.
My safety means more to me than mental health. Hannibal Lecter said that twice. Twice. So, okay. All right.
Fight or flight response, man. We choosing to fight. Forget that.
Getting
into our last segment of the day, the new one we stole from the guys over at TBC, Mr. Ethan Howell, let's get into your segment of Either Or.
All right. By the way, real quick shout out to Charlie on putting together those graphics there. Look really good. Really good. Well done, sir. He gave me the floor. our PS5 in the background. All right. This week's either or. Wait, can we do the thing, Div or where y'all are still on the sides? We can still see y'all because I'm asking to y'all. With me. Yeah, perfect. Okay,
there you go.
We're getting there. We got a little bit of a finagling you. We got there. Okay, so this week's either or. This goes out to Otis and Charlie and anyone else out there. Think about this to yourselves, or write in. That's fine too. Either or, zombie edition. in a dystopian post-apocalyptic world full of zombies, either you have an amazing firearm, let's say a fully loaded Gat or a automatic rifle, but you are extremely nearsighted. I'm talking about you can't see hardly shit. Like, it takes a miracle for you to even figure out which way up is. But you have that Gat. Or you have one hell of an incredible melee weapon. A melee weapon that for days, the greatest melee weapon that you could possibly fathom. But you only have one finger and you are very, very weak armed. I'm talking about like extremely weak armed. Like you have your hands are basically worthless and you couldn't hit a baseball to save your life.
All right. So if I would take the gun. Then I'm going to go rob somebody of their melee weapon with that gun and then take the melee weapon. That's how it's going to go. Yeah.
Okay. All right. I think you should work too.
First off, did this man say Gat? This man called it a Gat? This man called it a Gat.
Is 1995? It's then and now. I am the then. I was born before Charlie even knew what puberty was. So, yes.
This man called it a Gat. Yes, Ethan. I think I would have to take that Gat just due to the fact that when it comes to zombie universes, a scratch will do you in, and I don't want to take no chance of getting up and close and personal with any kind of. I'm just spraying for the head, and hopefully I hit something. But I'm not about to run up on you with a sword or a knife and get potentially scratched up.
See, you off because like that gun is eventually going to run out of ammo. So you're gonna need that melee weapon eventually. So,
and you eventually gonna get tired swinging around a sword.
True, but like,
and it's a weak arm too.
You're talking about like 20 bullets. No. That's it. I was gonna take the gun and then go rob somebody of their weapon. That's what I said.
You did. I. That's not a bad idea though. That's not a bad idea. Here's the thing though. As we've already established, Dev has no problems killing his friends and family. Oftentimes in post-apocalyptic world, you're with a group. And if you hear a noise, let's say, for example, it's late at night, you hear a noise, like a can drops, you pick up your Gat, and you just blast randomly, odds are you're hitting all your friends and family first and foremost, no zombies. That's what I'd be worried about, because you can't see shit. So, but I feel you, though. I would go for the Gat, too, probably, in all honesty. I would.
I mean, he used to run up on people and say, give me your money, Sane. Do you see my Gat?
When I was growing up in the 90s, people said Gat still. I mean, people use the word Gat. It's still a real thing. It's like it doesn't exist. It still exists. I thought that word.
Yeah, copper. Yeah.
You're going to do a search of people. When was the year that people stopped saying Gat?
The official year, 1947. I completely agree.
That's
the best strategy, is to take said gun, fire it randomly at living or dead people. Because like, here's the thing. Odds are, if you were to rob somebody of their melee weapon, they're still using it, which means they're still alive. So you have no problems killing off a living person.
Yeah, man.
Y'all
are savage. Like I said, this has been the most revealing hour I spent with y'all in the entire year and a half I've known y'all. I'm enlightened. I am thoroughly enlightened.
I'm picking up the Gat. I'm just going, yeah.
I didn't say Tommy gun. If I said a Tommy gun, that would be something as far as like it's clearly in the age of rum running. But yeah, the Gat.
Oh god,
I regret nothing.
My face hurts. Okay, guys.
When you said like, I automatically pictured what's that movie with can't remember his name now from the Pirates series.
Pfeiffer? Oh, Mekhi Pfeiffer.
No. Johnny Depp.
Oh,
what was the movie where he was the bank robber John with the Tommy gun?
Public Enemies.
That was probably okay. We're gonna
end the show on me reminding somebody of Johnny Depp in Public Enemies. That's a low point. That's what I'd rather.
I don't even know if that movie was good because I didn't.
It wasn't. It was not. Aquaman's one of his lesser films. So having that been knowing that now, I am looking forward to having either Otis or Charlie kill me very, very soon, even before I even get bitter scratched in the zombie apocalypse.
Wouldn't happen to have scratched.
I hit you with the Assassin's Creed, like quick we got Kenpachi. I give you respect that he gone. My boy, my man.
Sure you will. But as we established already, Otis has no problems taking said firearm, going down and hunting a living person, killing said living person, then stealing their shit.
See, if they live or die, up to them. If they hand it over, then they get to survive. You know,
for about half an hour until a zombie shows up.
Hey. That's not my problem.
what we're forgetting is you talking about me, but we're forgetting this man O is from Chicago and he is a Chirac Saggy. Yeah. He's been about to run around in the zombie land listening to Chief Keef blasting on this.
It's fair. Hey. Fair enough. He's prepared. Hey, for
bang, bang. Oh fair. My God.
That's fair. You could argue that the streets of Chicago are worse than the zombie apocalypse already. So fair enough.
They're probably living in the zombie apocalypse. You kind of crackheads.
Yeah.
You have to think back. All right, guys. Well, we'll close out of this little episode. This has been another, I guess, the first live episode of Then and Now. Thank you guys for tuning in. We appreciate all the support so far on the page. Please follow the page. Also follow a Blurproof Entertainment page if you're watching from there, and wherever you're watching this from, just follow it. 9 times out of 10, you probably already are. You guys have anything else you guys want to say?
Don't just follow. Tell your friends to follow it. You know what I'm saying? Tell your relatives to follow it. If you got somebody that likes to talk about, you know, robbing people, tell them to follow it too. Like, you know, like don't tell them where we are, but like, just tell them to follow.
Yeah, you can tell where Otis is. I don't trust that guy anymore with guns. And also, real quick, Rain. You with me in the apocalypse. Don't go anywhere near these guys. They will kill you before you even get there.
Well, so, Rain,
I get Rain. In the zombie draft, I'm calling Rain.
You just know me and Otis gonna come rob you, right? And just take you there, right?
I know. My bodyguard. I need to hire my bodyguard apparently around my friends.
Oh God. All right.
Friends is a loose term in the zombie apocalypse. I'm just throwing it out there.
I'm learning that now definitively. Good God.
All right, guys. Well, this has been another episode of Then and Now. Thank you guys for tuning in, and we'll see you guys next time.